NYC's Right Talk Radio Weekend continues with The Dirt. Your host, Lori Schultz.
Wow! You're listening to the station that's been owned and operated by your friends and neighbors for over 72 years.
814. Five in a row. Come on, baby, let's boogie.
Number one then, and number one in local talk now.
You're listening to The Good Life with me, Mike the Wine Guy.
This is Paul Preston, and you're listening to Inside Education.
Hey, this is Live with Lou, broadcasting high atop Mount Hood.
KMYC, 1410 AM, Marysville, Yuba City.
Stay tuned for The Dirt with Lori Schultz on the Right Talk Radio, KMYC, 1410 AM. Healing Hands, Healing Hearts seeks to support traditional medical care by providing massage, comfort, and connection for the body, mind, and spirit of the terminally, chronically, and critically ill. For more information regarding upcoming open enrollment for touch therapy classes and more in the Sacramento area, please call Monica at 916-968-0091. That's Healing Hands, Healing Hearts. Next is Lori Schultz and The Dirt. If you'd like to call in and participate in today's show, you can do so by dialing area code 530-742-5555.
Now, back to The Dirt. Here's Lori Schultz.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt today, and I'm really excited to be back. I've been on a little bit of a vacation to the Midwest, so The Dirt is in full swing now, and I just want to thank Chris Singleton for being here with me tonight. He's my co-host slash video guy,
producer. Welcome back, Lori. Welcome back.
Thanks. He's my do-it-all guy, right?
I do my best to do everything, yeah.
I just have to show up. He just creates everything. It's really awesome. So anyway, I just want to thank you for being here today with me. And I'm really, really excited about the show we've got. We actually have Din Parsons and Elise Bryan on the show with us, and they're the authors. Well, Din Parsons is actually the author for The Strong Witch Society, The Diary of Mary Bliss Parson. And then their second book that came out, The Lost Revelation, The Diary of Mary Bliss Parsons, Volume 2, and that was by Din Parsons and Elise Bryan. And they were two amazing books. I actually just finished the second book just this week, and I love both of the books. Very enlightening in a lot of ways. And if you haven't checked them out, you can go to the Dirt page and find those books. I posted them today, and you know, get them, read them. I mean, these people are really looking out for, you know, the better of mankind, this world, everything. And so they've been on our show before, actually. And it's a welcome to have them back, because when I had them on last time, I hadn't read their books. And so
that always makes an interview difficult.
Well, you know what, though? I had them on based on just different criteria because of their paranormal experience and different things like that. I had them on because of their interest in the same thing. But then after reading his books or their books, and they're coming up with a third book, I really, now that I feel like the interview will be in a different swing. You know what I mean?
Totally different conversation today.
Exactly. And so I'm really looking forward to it. Do we have anything new going on at the station? Did I miss out on anything huge while I've been gone?
No, I think everything's pretty much the same.
Really?
Yeah, everyone's still doing their show. You know, everyone was wondering where you were.
You know, I thought it was weird that it didn't all fall apart while I was gone. You know?
I'd never let that happen, Lori.
Oh, I appreciate that. But I mean, you know, you think you're leaving, you're like, wow, what are they going to do? You know, how's this going to hold out? I mean, I'm 2 weeks in a row, it seems like a long time. I was actually nervous to be back on the show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's
weird.
Well,
you got some cold feet, huh?
I did. I was a little hesitant. I mean, it's matched with not having anybody next to me. Anybody's watching, it's
just
me.
Yeah, just in there by yourself
today. Just me today. And if anybody wants to call in, if you've had a chance to check out the Dirt page, check it out if you haven't. But anyway, if you'd like to call in and talk to Din or Elise, the number here is 530-742-5555. 5555. And if you're in your car and you're listening and you're going to get home and you'd like to just listen online, you don't want to sit out in your car and listen to my two-hour show, I can understand that. So then just get on KMYCradio.com and you can listen to it live. And I think we've got Ustream hooked up, do we?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, we're you streaming it too, and you can find that link on my website on the dirt. So anyway, I do believe we have our special guests on the air, but what we're going to do is take a little break, and as soon as we get back, we'll be on the air with Din Parsons and Elise Bryan, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. Thanks, everybody. Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and I think I was just cranked up really loud. Sorry if I blasted all of your eardrums, everyone. So anyway, we are here with my special guests, Din Parsons, Elise Bryan. Are you here on the line with me, you guys?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, we are.
Hi. Thank you so much for being on The Dirt with me again. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Oh,
lovely.
Good. I don't even know, you know what's weird is before I had all these questions for you guys because I didn't even have a clue, right? And now when I'm clued in, now I'm like, oh my goodness, where to start? And I can't even believe I got through 2 hours before knowing nothing.
Well, you can ask anything you want, and if we don't know the answer, we'll make it up.
Oh, well, okay. I bet you'll know the answer, though. I'm sure about that. So anyway, okay. I'm so excited to have you guys here, and thank you very much for taking time on your Saturday night to spend it with The Dirt. I appreciate it. And I know after reading the books, you both have, along with some of your other dear friends, have a lot going on. But what I'd like to do, because I'm not sure if every listener was tuned in the very first time that, you know, you guys aired with The Dirt. So what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, if you want to give everybody kind of like a little preview about, you know, who you are, what you were doing for a living and everything like that before you had your first revelation, basically. And then we'll go with Elise.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, this is going on about 8 years ago when I first had the revelation with Mary. And at that time, I was a number of things. I'd been a teacher, I'd been a school principal, I'd been a minister of a church, and I'd been an artist and a number of other things. And I was sitting in my living room looking out the window, and we were having a spring storm here where we live in the Midwest, and all of a sudden this great big flash of ball lightning went off right in front of the window outside. And it was so powerful that I actually felt the heat and the energy from the ball lightning go through my body.
Wow.
And it was something I've never heard of before. In fact, the next day I actually did some research to find out what ball lightning was, and because I'd never heard of it. And sure enough, that was what the experience was. It was just a round ball of lightning about the size of a Volkswagen up in the air, off of the ground, probably about 30 feet. And it was just a powerful, powerful experience. And it was that night that I had the experience that I had my first visitation from Mary, who is my great-grandmother nine times removed. And she basically came to my mind and started speaking to me. And that's how it all got started.
And that's amazing, too. Like what you're saying, like right away you started to basically Google it, right? And start looking things
yeah.
up. And I think that would have been the natural response, or, hey, neighbor, did you see what I saw last night? You know what I mean? You
right.
just start checking. You're just like, how did this happen? And so did you realize, I mean, at that point, I mean, I know the answer to this, but did you realize that ball of light at that time had something to do with your visit from your grandmother?
I had no, at the time when the ball lightning went off, I had no idea what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And, we got a couple of dogs in the background, but I hope you can't hear those barking like that.
I heard
them. but I had no idea what the ball of lightning was about. I only could feel the energy, and it wasn't until later on that night that I actually had the visitation. I was laying in my bed, and I heard her speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she literally said, "I would speak with you." And I thought, what in the world is going on? And as you can read inside the book, I was very, very confused. I thought I have a little poodle named Natalie at the time, and I thought she was the one that was making all the noise or something. Of course, she couldn't talk, but I thought she was just making some noise.
Right.
And I looked all over the house. I looked in the closets. I looked under the bed. I looked everywhere for this noise. And then I decided it was just my imagination. So I tried to go back to sleep, and then she spoke to me again, said the same thing. I would speak with you. She did that three times. And that was the end of the night. Then I started getting these kind of dream visions. I mentioned in the book they were kind of like ticker tape, you know, on a ticker tape parade. It spits out these words from this ticker tape machine, and that's what she did in my mind. And she was delivering messages to me in this running stream of words, and it was a very bizarre, bizarre thing. I thought I was going crazy.
Okay,
Go ahead.
I don't want to stop you. You're the one with information.
Well, I was just going to say the next morning when I got up, I literally thought I had a nightmare or something like that, and I went outside in my back garden area where I have this huge linden tree, which is a beautiful tree, and I go under there to write all the time and to think and whatever. And while I'm sitting out there, I start just thinking in my head, well, what went on? What went on? And then I had another one of these visions, and it was broad daylight. So then I go inside and I pour cold tea over my head, thinking, "Uh-oh, something's wrong with me." But it just escalates from there. And pretty soon she started showing me almost like videotapes, and they were memories of something within my own spirit, something within my mind of many years ago, hundreds of years ago. And I could see a little cottage, I could see a running stream, I saw a woman in one of these things, and she kept feeding me these videotapes in my head, these visions or these images.
Trying to awaken you to your memories.
Yeah, it was kind of a natural awakening force that she was feeding me. And we get, you know, farther into the book, she starts then kind of appearing to me in my head. And, of course, people probably think the guy's crazy, schizo or something, but I assure you it's not true.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, if they read your book, or either one, like you were saying in the second book, if you haven't read the first, go ahead, it's not too late to read it, you know what I mean? But
right.
If they read it, like the way I did, like I started reading your first one, and then when your second one came out, like that, like in order, maybe when I bought them, they were both out, I can't remember, but I bought both, and then I just read them in order, and it does kind of just flow, and like it lays out the foundation. I mean, as the book progresses, so does everything else. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's
right.
What I'm curious about, before we kind of get started on everything, when you released your first book, were you already aware of everything happening in the writings of the second book, or how close from like when you ended the first book were you into writing the second book? I guess.
Not very far.
Okay.
Actually, the second book was dictated to me and played itself out in real life. And this is why we can basically prove that this... I'm going to let Elise talk about this, too. She'll probably tell you a little different angle to it. But this is how we can actually prove this is all accurate, because there are people that witnessed a lot of the things that go on in book number two. And now that we're writing book three, volume three, which is the end of the trilogy, there are other people that have come forward, and we have lots of people that can verify the things that are in these books.
I know.
Elise, did you want to add something to that?
Well,
how about if you introduce yourself first, Elise?
Sure.
Okay.
So, my name is Elise R. Brion, and I am co-author to Volume 2 of The Lost Revelation, and will continue to be so. This is going to be a trilogy for now, more to follow for sure, but this chunk is definitely a trilogy. maybe that's enough for now, but my thought on Dean's comment is that these books bend time, because time only exists in the third dimension here on Earth. And so, in one sense, there was third dimensional real time in the chronology of how and when they were written, all that jazz. But as he said, there is a far greater spirit of the one that is behind and has previously written, so to speak, all of the subject matter, which we will share forth.
Yeah, that's true. I see what you're saying with that. But I guess, like you're saying, like with the third dimensional aspect of it, just the curiosity of just like the book being released to people as things were being revealed You know what I mean? Just because it seems so laid out, like you feel like you're going right along with it, like from when he meets you, when you move across the street, just all of it. You know what I mean?
Right. That's correct. And book number one was actually, I was actually writing the book as Mary was communing with me.
Yeah,
I had my pad and paper out in the backyard. I didn't work on a computer. I couldn't, because I couldn't carry a computer with me everywhere that we went. And she would talk to me, and I would hand write this. And having been a former principal, I was pretty good at shorthand, so I could actually write what she was saying as she was doing it. And then when book two came out, just a little while after book one was out there on the market, the same thing started happening. I was basically dictating what she was writing to me.
Yeah.
And the book is almost like a living organism. It's something, and I say one of the real different things about these books is it's interactive with the audience.
I think people, it is, too.
Sure. The people who read this aren't just reading a dry old book. They're reading something that's really happening right then. And there are actually people out there that are being awakened by the words of this book, because a lot of what we put in these books are subliminal messages that awaken specific people that need to be awakened. And that's happening all over the world. We're having people from literally many countries in this world that are coming forth with this.
I think it's so beautiful. Like, both books, just the way that they're written, and they are enjoyable and they are different. And I think the reason that they're different is because of the way you were recording it as you were going. Like, things were happening, you were just writing it down. I think it's almost transcript-ish. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In a sense, and I think that's why it makes it, for me, I couldn't stop being curious about everything that was going to happen. I was like, it was a very addictive book. Until my computer, because I got it on my Kindle. So the second book, when I brought my computer in, it ended up that they wiped it out, and so I had to figure out how to reload into that. It literally took me 2 days of, like, kidding me? I was like, I couldn't even wait to finish it, because I was really excited to see the end. And I have to say, I love your books. They're
beautiful. Thank you.
And you're very welcome. And thank you guys for writing them, because, I mean, I think the message is beautiful. And I think that everybody, no matter where they stand, just like what you were saying in the second book, no matter where they stand and what they believe that they are, there's just one thing, there's a few things that people should be caring about, and it's others and love and everything else. So no matter what, I think these books would resonate with anyone. You know, I mean, I think anybody would read these and be able to get something special, a very special message from them.
Well, thank you. I agree with that. They do have a special energy frequency that does seem to transmit that into the reading public. Yeah. And now they're coming out in audio. In fact, book number one is in audio form now, and book two will be in audio in a matter of days.
Wow.
And people can actually listen to them, and the energy vibration will be probably magnified in the listening to it.
Who do you have speaking for it? Is it just somebody random, or is it you?
No, it's through, what is it called, Audiophile?
Mm-hmm.
Audiophile, which is a very large, I guess the largest audio, Audible corporation out there. But anyway, no, they actually had to, play a part with this, and they had to audition for the part to read on these books.
Okay.
And they're professional readers. But what I understand, the one on book number two really got into it, and she started actually semi-channeling, I think, with Mary in some respect, and it's quite interesting. I haven't heard it yet, but from what my publishers have told me, it's quite fascinating. So I'm anxious to hear that.
I'm really happy that you guys are doing that, because, I mean, a lot of people do enjoy just, you know, they're commuting, they throw the audiobook in, and check it out. I mean, it's a great book. I really love it. So one thing I wanted to say is just, like, I feel like I know you guys, which is weird. The last time I didn't, and, like, this time I feel like I know you guys. So it's kind of odd, because it's almost like, well, like the book, like the name of the book says, it's a diary. And in a sense, but it's also a diary for you guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just
correct.
A diary. I mean, it goes far back, like you're talking about, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, but I'm saying, like, for you guys also in the recent times that you guys just met, it is a diary of what's transpired since your meetings, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Very personal in some places.
Yeah.
Usually personal.
And it's a very personal. Like, I see what Elise is saying with that. Like, it is. And it, I think it's also beautiful. And when I sit here and listen to you guys' voices, now I'm like, I have your picture of, you know, I see you guys in your Facebook, and I see just the different photos. Like, I love the photo, Elise, when you're writing, and you, that one where you're smelling the beautiful blue flowers. Like, I mean, all of it, I'm like, that's her. She's on here, and this is about them and, you know, both of you. It's just beautiful. And also the other strong witches. So maybe if you want to, I guess maybe, I don't know where exactly you want to start with this, but the two books, maybe start with the one, and then we can get into the two, though, a little bit more, because the first time we, you know, we did talk about the book one. So we're actually heading to a break, though. If you guys hold tight, when we come back, we'll talk about, you know, the books and kind of get into that. So everybody stay tuned for The Dirt. We'll be right back with Din and Elise. This is Elise Bryan, and we are talking about their two books, their lives, past lives, their two books, The Strong Witch Society, The Diary of Mary Bliss Parson, and the second book, The Lost Revelation, The Diary of Mary Bliss Parsons, Volume 2, that was written by both Din and Elise. So while we're on our break, Chris Singleton, who is basically my co-host and everything else, engineer, I mean, just you can call yourself anything you want. And he was like, I want to hear more of Elise on here, too. And I was like, totally. Well, we're going to get it over to the second book.
Don't worry. I'm way into the dimensional time kind of stuff.
Yeah, so, he is. Yeah. So if you guys are listening, this is like Chris. He's like, he's wanting to astro project. I mean, he's got all these these ideas behind the glass here. I think the glass does something to him back there. It's a different oxygen. No, there's a different vibrational field
over
there.
Here,
yeah. Actually, the glass separates us, and I think you are in a different dimension.
It's all these machines.
Anyway, welcome back, Din and Elise. We had a little break, but I am excited to get into the books a little bit. However, I don't know how much you want to get into them because, I mean, they're for sale. I don't know if you want, how you want to handle that. So I guess I'll just kind of leave it up to you guys how much you want to dig into your books.
Oh, okay. Well, we don't mind talking about them. Our main purpose is not to make money on the books. It's basically to push the message of the books.
That's what I thought, and that's the way I felt about it, because I knew you wanted to be on to talk about it, and we would have way more conversation with me having the awareness of what's in these books. And and so I figured that's the case, but I just didn't want to put you in the position of, you know.
No, that's quite all right. You can ask us anything, because we're not in it for the money. In fact, you don't get rich being an author anyway.
An artist, right? It's like they always care about what you say when it's gone, right?
That's right. I thought about a good place to start with this was to give a brief synopsis of who Mary is, because a lot of people that are listening right now maybe they didn't hear the very first one that we did with you.
Okay.
And they don't even know who we're talking about here. Mary was my ninth great-grandmother, nine times removed, going back nine generations. And she was tried for witchcraft during the Salem witch trials. In fact, she was one of the very first ones to be tried before the really famous ones came along a few years later. She was tried in 1675.
Wow.
And she was tried three different times and acquitted all three times. She never denied being a witch, though. She always got her freedom because her husband, Joseph Parsons, yes, they were Mary and Joseph, but her husband, Joseph Parsons, was very wealthy, and he bought her freedom. And that's really a lot of what that was all about back in those days. But she was she died, incidentally, in 1712. But she started something called the Strong Witch Society. And a lot of people don't know about that, but it is a fact. And it was a group of the original people, the original founders of this world 3.5 million years ago. And this book gets into some kind of different kinds of things that people are not used to getting into in books like this. But it has to do with other world contacts and things like that. But Mary basically died when she was an older lady, and then she reappeared. She tried to reappear in other descendants of mine or, you know, ancestors of mine going back in time, but she wasn't able to. It was the ball lightning, apparently, that released the energy that allowed her to come into my mind and be activated. But she'd been in there for quite some time. Apparently, she'd been in me since birth trying to do this. And I wasn't able to hook into her. So I didn't even know anything about having a witch in the Salem witch trials being part of my family.
I know, but I think that's so interesting.
It is, but that's who we're dealing with here. She was a witch. She was a very powerful witch, and still is to this day. But during book number one, just to make a long story short,
okay,
it's about trying to locate the group of 10 people that were descended from the original founders of this planet 3.5 million years ago, and they are called the Strong Witch Club. In book number two, we find out they don't use the word witch. Witch is just kind of a different form of the word, of the original word, which is wheat, W-E-E-T,
mm-hmm,
and which is kind of a made-up word, actually. But we find out that we get introduced to three of the witches in book number two and who they are. And then in book three, we're going to get introduced to some more. But the whole point of the book is to awaken the witches that are out there, the wheat that are out there, and also the secondary group of wheat. There are a number of those all over the world, and we're trying to awaken them as well. So that's the object. And the reason we're trying to awaken them is this: they have a certain energy frequency that when you combine them all together, they can help heal the planet Earth, which is, as everybody knows, a disaster right now.
Right.
We've got volcanoes and tsunamis and earthquakes, F5 tornadoes that are coming through Missouri and Kansas and Oklahoma like nobody's business, like never before in history.
Mm-hmm.
We've got asteroids hitting the Earth. We've got, you name it. We've got political turmoil. We've got wars. We've got conflicts. Everything is just going crazy right now.
Very
the
true.
Reason that's happening is because the main creation frequency, which gave life to this world and sustains all living things on this planet, is being messed up. And it's being messed up by the people. And we're trying to give the message to the people on how to correct that. And we give some of that correction in book two. Book three really goes into more detail. But we're trying to get the people aware of the fact that they need to do two main things in order to correct and save the world. And it doesn't have anything to do with religion. It doesn't have anything to do with an angry God or sin or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally the people are messing up their own planet, and they have to change. And it's their choice to either change or allow the planet to be destroyed within a 25-year period. And now we're down to 22, incidentally.
Wow.
So that's just a brief synopsis of the book.
And before you had your revelation, though, and before you started writing book number one, can you tell everybody where you were as far as your spirituality, your faith, or however you want to say it? Because I understand where you're at, but so that people can maybe see, like, the change, 8 years, how much of a difference this is all, you know, made in your life, Annalise's.
Well, at the time I actually started writing the book, I was a pastor of a church. I was a minister, a
yes.
Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone through many things in the past, but, you know, just experimental stuff like everybody does in their life. I'm 64 years old, so I've been around a lot, and I've gone through a lot of different things.
You're just a baby.
Well, I'm a baby. if the people only knew, yes, I am
yeah,
a baby.
True.
But everybody is an eternal spirit being, of course. But we explain exactly how that works. In fact, one of the neat things about these books is that it's one of the controversial things about these books, is that we give information to the world about physics and general science that are absolutely alien to the contemporary theories that people have on this earth. And since the books have been printed, I have had physicists, astrophysicists, biologists, all kinds of different people from different scientific, you know, professional scientists that have written me letters, called me on the phone and said, wow, where'd you get this? We've been looking at that kind of information for years, and you've given us keys to these things.
Really?
And it's amazing. But that's one of the controversial things about this. We explain a different origin to the human species that is explained in any of the holy books, the scriptural references, anything. We tell where this world came from and exactly why it's become screwed up to the point where it is today.
And
so it's an amazing book. If people read this,
mm-hmm.
and it makes sense too. It's not like something like a fiction. It's not like a cartoon or anything
no,
like
isn't.
That.
And
it
also,
makes sense.
The way you were writing it, too, like you can see your information and your knowledge actually expand. I mean,
yes.
Just from going from the person who's basically the student or the spirit, or the spiritual person who's basically the student turning into, so to speak, a teacher for, like, Elise and the other ladies that are mentioned in book two. And
right.
So, I mean, it just, you can see things evolve for you. Like, I mean, because you wrote it the way you wrote it, and I think that might be part of the reason it was written that way, so that
right.
we could see your growth, if you
I
want
think,
to call it
I think
it
you're
that.
Right. In fact, in book number one, I had no idea what I was writing in many of the cases.
And
when
I
was writing things
down. And
I
also
think
you weren't seeking this anyway, like at
that
point in your life.
I wasn't seeking anything at that point in my
yeah,
life.
That's
I was perfectly
makes,
content.
And it's clear. You know what I mean? By reading it, like I do believe that everything you wrote, what you were writing it as you were receiving it and the way you would write it down did sound elementary at first compared to how you ended up writing and understanding and accepting things and just how little by little things were brought to you.
Right.
Anyway, so keep going. I didn't want to interrupt you, but as a person who read your books, I just want you to have like the insight of like what it's like to be like me on the other side reading it.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's basically it. And like I say, from that point forward, when she started coming into my mind or awakening in my mind, she'd been there all my life. I just didn't know it. But when she started awakening, I just started shaking my head every single day thinking, is this real? What in the world is this? Where are these thoughts coming from? I don't know anything about physics, and I'm coming out with advanced physics theories in this book. In fact, I'm coming out with theories that have never been heard of before in this book. And many are released, and many will be released in the future. I've got information on how to make energy out of a common desert rock called red jasper. I mean, a simple rock that you find in the desert. You can make all the energy to power this earth for millions of years, if you want to, out of a handful of rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, these kinds of things people don't know about on this world. They're still digging for coal and natural gas and things like that.
But
they just aren't necessary. But the reason we haven't found those things yet are simply because the people of this world have messed it up along the way. I mean, we're still in the Dark Ages. People think the Dark Ages were 600-700 years ago. Well, they're not. We're still in the Dark Ages here. We ought to be dancing on the stars out there right now.
Right.
And we're not. And simply because people have been so involved in their own egos, their own wars, their anger, their emotions. The biggest problem on this planet today, and it has been for thousands of years, is the emotional makeup of the human being. They don't know how to use their emotions properly. And that's what causes the problems. And all the jealousies and angers and wars and all those things start. So one of the main messages of this book, and all of the books, is to get away from that and return to the purity of what your mind was like when you were first put here.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes so many things. The promise of this book, it comes with a promise and it comes with a threat. At the end of the 25 years, if mankind has not done what Mary and the One, which is God,
mm-hmm.
demand of this world will be destroyed. If they do, however, as is mentioned in book number two, there is an incredible future ahead of this world. I mean, it makes everything you've ever seen in a Steven Spielberg movie look like Mickey Mouse. The good things.
Okay, everybody stay tuned. When we come right back, we're going to be talking to Din about when he met Elise. I would love to hear that next. So everybody stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Lori and her guest are waiting to hear from you. Give them a call at 742-5555. That's 742-5555. Here's Lori and the Dirt.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and I have Din Parsons and Elise Bryan on the show with me right now. And, of course, Chris Singleton back there behind the glass. And so, Din, Elise, are you still here with me?
We are.
Okay, great. I wanted to kind of continue on talking about the first book. Okay. When you first ended the first book and everything like that, you still, at that point, had you met Elise?
When I ended the first book?
Yeah.
No, I had.
Okay, yeah, well, that's what I thought. It was in between, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like in between, yeah. That's kind of awkward to explain exactly how that happened.
Okay.
It was a setup job by actually Mary and my otherworldly daughter named Annie, which you read about in the books and the people will read about in the books.
Yes.
I actually saw her across the street from where I live mowing a lawn.
I remember that. Like,
yeah.
And it's amazing. Okay, so everybody listening, like, I just want to say, like, reading these two books, it's a very intimate, they're both very intimate books. I mean, do you think that's fair for me to say? Because I feel like, yeah, because I feel like we're getting this play by play of like the things you guys are going through and your feelings and the things that you do and just everything. And, so I'd really love to I hope everybody's kind of following along how this has happened and your revelation and meeting Mary. And so if you want to explain maybe a little bit more about that and then kind of where you were at when you met Elise and you guys started working together on book two.
Well, I'm going to let Elise talk for a couple of minutes because
okay.
She was part of that, and she can explain it as well.
We would love that.
Okay.
Okay.
well, one thing that Mary is adamantly insisting that humanity understand, reconnect to, is the fact that life, all of life, all spirit beings within life, all sentient and non-sentient beings of life, belong to God. And yes, in her lifetime, she was very much a Christian. She was the purity of the Word of Christ. And she happened to be extremely beautiful, and that is why the initial attacks came upon her. There's more details to that, but bringing it back to the first thought is that the interconnectivity that is so popular in media these days and spiritualism and in this new age sort of talk
mm-hmm.
goes so far beyond that conception. Because right now people are just talking it and doing their best to radiate it to the best of their mental ability.
Right.
But Mary's messages truly are a living body coming through the book, contributed unto by our own spirits. But I want to give a picture, because Masaru Emoto's book, The Power of Water, which I constantly support and speak of, The Power of Water, he discusses the fact that thought is vibration that directly alters and changes the structural frequency of a molecule of water. He shows that in his book. It took him 25 years to scientifically prove that with correct scientific photography, that freeze point, that melting point between a frozen drop of water into the melting spot. But he got it. And that book is thin, but I recommend to 7 billion people on the planet, literate, and then if you're not, get somebody to read it to you.
Okay.
Because it displays the living truth and the eternal living truth that the thought is a frequency that affects everything. So because he obviously, I mean, it's so simplistic, but it's so profound, we being 100%, nearly 100% water in physical form, I mean, what is your anger and your resentment and hatred and jealousy doing? Truly. And if life is life is life, interconnectivity, belonging to God, what are you doing to every single molecule and every single being by your own inability to get past what happened to you at 15 years of age, etc.?
Right.
So, yes, we talk about the strong wheat, you know, in book one, Dean talked about witches, and in book two, we use wheat. Book three, we don't, you know, we are straying away from this word and concept of wheat and witch, because the ultimate goal, the vision, is that all beings come to feel, think, know, live, emanate, radiate the absolute sacredness of their place within life. And I'll tell you what, nobody on this planet knows the percentage of people necessary that God has deemed, that Mother Hecate has deemed important or necessary to awaken so as to make the shift towards this absolute perfect heaven on earth. But we're not even thinking quotas. We're not thinking percentage. We're thinking 7 billion and beyond.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking pure reconnection, and it is very, very simple, but takes the work of a diligent warrior of the heart to proceed, because ego is a very, it's a nemesis more horrible than anything humanity really has ever seen, as I see it.
Yeah, like, well, the saying, get over yourself, is like, it's actually really intelligent.
Yeah, and it ain't easy. It's not an easy thing.
It is.
It's not.
It can be.
It can be, indeed. Mm-hmm. It can be, and this is also what we radiate and that we teach, especially through Volume 3, is that all you have to do is once, truly, all you have to do is once is say, I know that I belong to you, Creator, God, whatever word it is you use, and I need you. I have been crushed, and I have crushed myself, and I give myself to you. And I tell you that your DNA, every cell in your body, begins to change, but it is up to the individual to accept, believe, and live the truth that that change is instant, immediate, healed, and saved. But that's the problem. We have a world, a 21st century, third dimensional world where everything on this planet has been thusly created from the institutional form of ego, everything, mm-hmm. everything on this planet. And so we live in pretty much a battle zone that distracts, intentionally tries to disconnect from the simplistic truth of what the body of Christ, which is unconditional love and truth, is, that you already have it.
I agree. And, you know, a lot of the second book, it did affect me a lot just because of one of the other, I don't know what you want to call her now if you're steering away from the words, but the lady who lost her son. I don't know if we're mentioning names and different things.
No, that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah. And she actually, and with me losing my son too, it's weird. I've always been spiritually close to God and my religion and everything, and just always, I've always known that there's more, you know what I mean? So it's never been a question for me, but also going through that with my son, it's, you do go through so much. It's just different. Certain things awaken different things inside of you. And going through a loss as extreme as that, right around the time when I was reading this too, and having her go through like a similar time, almost it was a far enough time apart, but not really in a way. You know, that it was kind of close in timing as far as me reading it. Anyway, I don't know exactly the dates and times, but for me it was difficult. You know, and I could relate to how she was feeling from it. It was weird, and like her, you know, accepting where he was and everything else. It is hard. I mean, it's only 7 months for me, and so there's so many things you struggle, and you have to pull close to God. You have to have faith in order to get through these types of things. Otherwise, I think you could possibly just maybe go crazy. I don't know. I mean, if you didn't have God to get through these things, I don't know how you would.
Absolutely.
You know, so anyway, I could relate a lot to the second book. It was interesting following along the first one and getting to the second point, but I mean, it was just on base for me. It was just.
You're going to enjoy book three because it's all about miracles and healing.
Really?
And Merta is mentioned in that as well, again, including three other strong witches, strong wheat, that are also introduced in that book as well. But, you know, you said something interesting a couple of minutes ago. You said that you always knew there was something. You always knew something spiritually, that there was mm-hmm. something out there, like a God. That's what everybody seems to know. You know,
right.
Everybody on Earth, I think, really says, I always knew that. And it always takes a tragedy mm-hmm. or something bad to bring them back to God. And we're trying to get it into people's head that it doesn't take a tragedy.
Right.
You can just
and
start doing that now.
And it didn't take a tragedy for me. I've always been close. And that's why I think that's helped me so much. You know,
yes.
Like a lot of people think, you know, hey, you're doing really well or whatever. But I mean, I'm really not. I mean, it's up and down. But the thing is, I was always close, luckily, but you do still go through something else. Something's added to that. No matter how close of a relationship I've had, it was intensified being able to go through this, and I'm just grateful that I have my faith, because I don't know how else I'd be getting through it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but I'm interested in book three. When is it going to be coming out?
Hopefully before Christmas 2013. Oh. It's about to go to the publishers.
It's actually finished, and we're sending it to the publishers. They're expecting it probably this week. And then they have to take it through the editing process and, you know, the printing process. That takes about 5 or 6 months sometimes. It could be sooner than that. It just depends.
Now, was this book also kind of, were you writing as you heard from Mary, or was this built more from you and Elise, or how is this?
Well, it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
It's a little bit of both, and it's, I would, if I told you exactly what went on, you'd be very confused. But if you read the book, you'll understand. But okay. Mary makes it. Mary does dictate. Annie dictates in the book. Annie doesn't go away, and Annie will not go away because she's a very powerful being. And I don't know if you. I don't know if you could actually, after you read both book one and book two, you could. You can kind of sense how wonderful Annie really is.
Oh yeah.
And how powerful she is. I mean, she's not just a 15-year-old girl. That's the way she appears, but you know, frequently to me. But she's much more than that, and but she displays herself in book number three as well. And even after this trilogy is over, we plan on writing others that we're going to get into some very great detail on some things this world has never heard of.
Lori, have you had an opportunity to hear Mother Maid Manifest?
No.
Okay. The music album?
No, I didn't. Okay. And you know what? I actually, during our break at the top of the hour, I do have it on here and we can play some of it. So I brought it with because I actually got back in town last night. I've been on vacation and then I came back and then I went back to Nevada. So I've been traveling around and I just got my computer actually hooked up and was able to finish your book today. It was like, that's how squeezing and everything in I've been. But we're actually going to a break in 1 minute. And when we come back, we'll play some of your music. And then I would love to hear, you know, get into book two a little bit and just how everything evolved, how you guys found each other and how other people were brought to you and how they were awakened. And I just really want to get into that aspect of it because I think that's really beautiful. So everybody stay tuned for the dirt, and you guys will have a little longer break this time if you need to get drinks or anything like that. So stay tuned for the dirt, everybody. We're having a great interview with Din and Elise, and we'll be back in just a little bit with some beautiful music.
Warning, what you're about to hear is true and may be disturbing for some audiences.
Actually, it started with my kids. The kids were waking up in the middle of the night saying that they felt that somebody was over them. They were hearing singing.
You're about to explore another world, another universe, with the likes of Ghost, Bigfoot, and UFO.
They were standing up there doing an investigation, and they saw a phantom fire appear growing green and yellow.
You are tuned to the dirt.
When they walked towards it, it went out, and it just disappeared. And they heard what sounded like an Indian saying, Eotosh, Eotosh, which in Algonquin language means stand and fight.
You are tuned to the dirt.
So we pulled down this road, and we got down into a little bit of a clearing. And about that time, we heard this loud scream, howl, pipes down. The thing was sitting there. It was huge. You could see it kind of, it almost like it was dancing back and forth and had its arms waving. My stepmother looked at me and said, that's Bigfoot.
And now, here comes your diva of the dark, Lori Schultz.
Thank you for the sweetness of the ice cream cone of my life. I will take it down to the river.
Thank you so much for that beautiful music, Chris and Elise, for producing it. It's very beautiful. We were listening to some of it during the break. Are you guys there with us?
Yes, we are.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Dirt with Elise, Brian, and we also have Din Parsons with us. And we are having just a wonderful time talking with both of you. And that music is so lovely. We couldn't decide which one you'd want to have played, but like when we go into another break, we'd love to play another one if you have like a request that you'd like everybody to hear.
I went with Ice Cream of My Life.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I'm sorry for the interruption when you were speaking earlier with Dean, but I mentioned the album because that song, and I just knew, I had a sense you were going to play that one, that song was co-written by one of my Earth daughters, Annie, as well, I mean, one of my Earth daughters and Annie and myself. But it's one of my Earth daughters that's actually singing it, performing it with me.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
She's 8 years old.
Aww. My Earth daughter, yeah. And I wanted that one as track one because the whole of what comes through me musically is, of course, inspired by the Holy Spirit. But each of those songs are designed and encoded specifically in relation to and radiant of the healing.
Aww.
And I have had amazing and crazy immediate responses from people I don't know. I've never met these people, but sharing with me in a personal way what has happened to them upon first listen. And I just I'm filled because that's exactly what the intention and what is behind each of these albums that I'm making.
Thank you so much for them. They're beautiful.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm going to listen to all of them, and I can't wait. And when we come back, when we go to a break, when we do, is there one that you would like to have lined up for everybody to hear?
I'm interested in what you're drawn to.
Okay.
Let's go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a fun thing for me, so I will do that. So now, I wanted to get into basically more into the second book, you guys, meeting, and Elise, like, what was happening to you. Now, as you were writing, I could see that you already had, like, your own foundation of faith and different things. I mean, through the Native American background and just everything like that. So maybe if you guys want to go ahead and kind of elaborate on the second book and everything that was taking place, your meeting. I know he saw you across the street. And Din, at this point, you were being told that there were going to be people coming to you. So up until this point, Elise was your first meeting, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So everybody who's listening, during the first book, Mary comes to him, you know, through that revelation, the ball of light, lightning, and everything like that. So you're being told that you're going to be meeting and having people come into your life, and you're going to be doing this, and this task is being put on you. And I remember reading about this in your first book. You're just like, me, how am I going to do this? And they're slowly awakening you and getting you to know who you are, what your mission is, or I don't want to call it a mission, whatever, however you want to, what you want to call
word.
It.
That's okay. A good word as any, I guess.
Okay. And so your mission here and what you're to do, like everybody has a purpose. Everybody does. And they're awakening you to yours. And so at this point, here's Din, everybody. Okay, I'm setting the stage. He's waiting. He's listening. He's having these things being told to him. He's trusting this. He's writing it down. He's doing what she says. He's trusting in everything that's happening, which is a good thing. And then, we get to the point of actually people being revealed to you. And so maybe, I don't know if that's a good spot to pick it up or...
Sure.
Okay.
You want me to give more details on Elise and how I met her?
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Okay. Well, as it says in book number two, Annie kept prodding me and Mary kept telling me that there's something special going to happen. They kept telling me to go out and mow the lawn next door. I own two houses and one's next door. And they said, go mow the lawn. Well, the lawn didn't need mowing. It had been mowed earlier, in a couple of days earlier, and it was just really a flat lawn. But I got on the mower. I have a riding mower, and I went out there and I started mowing the lawn, just like they told me to do. And sure enough, as I'm mowing the lawn, I look across the street, kind of catty-cornered, and there's this woman and two small children, and she's pushing a mower. And I'd never seen her before because I knew the owner of the home that she was at, and I knew he wasn't even there. He was on vacation somewhere or something. Mm-hmm. But here's this woman and these two kids going back and forth on this mower. And she looked very familiar to me. And Annie never told me that I was going to meet a strong witch or anybody special. She just said, "You're get over there and do this." And at one point she did say, a witch is near. But then I don't even recall exactly how it happened, but Elise came over and we started talking in the front lawn. Her kids started climbing the tree, in the maple tree on my property. And it just went from that point. And I knew immediately then who that was when she came over there. It didn't just dawn on me. I started with being flooded with visions and symbols and things in my head. This is somebody very, very special. And I knew she was, at the very least, a strong wheat or
and,
a strong
and
witch.
And the thing is, she didn't know. So just so everybody understands this,
right.
You had a revelation of who she was.
Right.
But now it was up to you, in a sense, to start trying to awaken her with thoughts or bring her to the idea of like, hey, I know you are something that's a part of something I'm doing, but you need to figure this out too. Am I correct?
That's basically true.
Mm-hmm.
She did not know who I was.
Right.
And it took actually 2 or 3 months before she came over for a second visit, and we started getting to know each other, and eventually she moved into that house next door to the lawn I was mowing. And that became her home with her children. But from that point forward, it was a slow awakening for her, but it was also an experience for me. And I was awakening in many respects to other aspects, because I didn't, again, you know, they'd thrown, like you say, they'd thrown this task at me and say, you've got to do this. And I didn't have a clue what I was doing. But then she was the first one that that was awakened by this. But then there were two more in book two that were awakened as well. And I think I'll probably let her tell you about those two.
Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, as you know, my diary, and it literally is my diary. I mean, I've got pencil and pen and all sorts of drips and drops and whatnot. But things started to happen to me rapid, like super wildfire and changes and things blasting through my mind. And I could probably try to get chronological for you, but that's not relevant. With Mirta, just visions, like video cam into her daily life, you know, and started to unfold in random moments, grocery shopping, you know, and driving my car to drop my kid off at such and such. And in the process of encountering, reconnecting with Dean, and I was very quiet about it at first, except through my journal, of course. And frankly, I didn't, you know, publishers wouldn't allow even the hugest chunk of what I was, what I had relayed, because, you know, I mean, blasting through into somebody's life, seeing what they're doing, like even changing clothes and stuff, I mean, come on, weird. But I was getting, I got the most important gist of, which was her heart. I was feeling and seeing, I was truly, literally seeing Mirta. And it was quite a few months before there was an actual physical encounter, but it ends up that she is actually physically much closer than I had originally thought. So that was pretty darn wild. And I definitely had to get to that. Just like Dean, I was like, oh my God, there is some strange dose of psychosis going on here. I've got like some weird voyeur thing going on.
And what was the first time that you ever like encountered Mary? Because like throughout the book, the second book, it's not like direct all the time, right?
Yeah. Yes, and this is a challenging one to put into words, and part of it will have to wait. But
okay.
I will say, I have a direct relationship with her, which I promise will be explained in future volumes.
Okay.
But in this bodysuit, in this lifetime, I too am a living descendant of her particular bodysuit lifetime. And what I mean by that is all of us, you, me, every human on this planet is using this lovely and beautiful sacred temple of a costume, these bodies, because we are eternal spirit beings. And so we have to look at the book and kind of break things down when we're talking about the characters.
That's
so
true.
Yes, there's a linear descendant relationship for myself and her in that lifetime, as well as an eternal relationship that is going to be described in the future. Sorry, I hope that's not...
Oh, no. That's perfect.
A lame answer, but...
No, that's perfect. And so I just kind of wanted everybody to see, like, because you co-author on the second one. So, I mean, obviously you and, you know, I keep saying Dinan. Is it Dean? And I'm sorry. I've said Din.
Dean, it's pronounced Dean, right.
Dean, okay. And I have said it wrong for probably now collectively over my last show. And
I am keeping track of those times.
Okay, it's not going to happen
again. Incidentally, Elisa's last name is pronounced Brion.
Brion? Okay, well, yeah. Now I've got it. Okay.
That's all right. What's in the name?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I would like to address you correctly. So, all right. Well, so basically you do have like a relationship that's direct with her and communication that's direct. It kind of, at first with Dean, it was always through him. And then throughout the second book and through meeting and becoming close, do any of the other ladies that are in the second book have a direct relationship with Mary, or is it more Dean or you, or how is
it? No,
this?
They do not. They do not.
Okay.
They basically are awakening under my tutelage and Elisa's tutelage too.
Okay.
So it's very difficult to explain some of this, and we're not holding anything back because we're trying to tease people with it.
It's
very difficult taking something that is interdimensional and otherworldly and then placing it into human language.
But the one thing that all beings really can sync with is the fact that we are all living with a serious case of lifetime amnesia from who we really are. We come into bodies with a very pure and strong spirit. These little babies flopping all around, googling and pooing and peeing and all that. And as we grow, you know, this ego develops and is fashioned and molded by the family and community at large, and there's a serious amount of disconnection that happens. So whatever intrinsic memory is instilled from in utero before the seed is even placed in utero and to birth is then gradually and exponentially severed. So it's the experience of a lifetime for all people to just get still enough, reject what needs to be rejected, and go, God, I want to know. I need to know who I am. Mm-hmm. But one could get crazy with that, go, but I want to know details. And some people go, oh, well, I think I was Sacagawea in another lifetime. Well, that's not the important thing. If it's within God's will, you know, God, how awesome to have specific, intricate details be revealed. But that's the main point is that everybody is born with a lot of amnesia and mm-hmm. a lot of disconnection in one lifetime.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people, like if you notice, there's a few books that have been written. I don't know if you heard of them where they're talking about like old souls and like children. Actually, Chris here, he Googled some of it for me when I was actually working here a few weeks ago. And little children sometimes have some of the memory left of where they came from before they start to lose it. I mean, and because people start to tell them, oh, that was just a dream, or no, you're just dreaming, or that's an imaginary friend, or whatever people start telling them, and it starts to just block them out. You know, I think they start to just block out.
One thing I want to butt in here about is in book number two, we do give a long example of what reincarnation really is. It's not what people think it is.
Do you want to explain that?
Well, I can't. It's very difficult to explain in a very short period of time like this. But mm-hmm. I will say that not everybody reincarnates. It is a choice to reincarnate, and there are certain people that choose to do that. There are other people that are different types of beings, like created beings, who also choose to do that for different reasons. But it's not something that just willy nilly. Everybody, all 7 billion people on this planet, have had reincarnated lives. The fact is, if you get right down to it, there would be a very small percentage that have them. And mm-hmm. the little boy that he Googled is one of those.
Right.
He did have an experience with a past life. But a lot of what people can tune in on, and they mistake it for being reincarnation, are ancestral memories. We have to remember that the DNA that a human being has in their body is basically the DNA that's been passed down through ancestors. And if an ancestor had a dream or a memory, why would that dream or memory not be passed down as well? And they're picking up, they're picking up on some of the same dreams that other people that came hundreds of years before them had. So okay. they're mistaking that for being reincarnation. But there's a small percentage of people on this earth that have been reincarnated. It's not just everybody.
And the only way you would really know, really, is to become enlightened or awakened and know that through that way. But I know some people, like, they go through hypnosis and different things like that. And you couldn't really trust that then.
No, you can't trust hypnosis anyway. You really cannot trust that.
And here's the, you know, another factor is that if a person is blessed with some really deep and powerful revelation about themselves, if it's real and true, I guarantee you that that person typically keeps it to themselves.
And they would know it, too. There would be no question. Yeah. There's, like, when you know something, you know it. And you don't really need anybody to verify it for you.
It's I found over the time that I've been doing this, it's the people that come out and write all the books, and I know I just wrote two of them, and one of them with Elise and three, but it's the ones that, that then start having workshops and seminars and start selling products and that are strictly business things, having nothing to do with spirituality, God, or a specific message that really is crucial. Those are the people you have to really question. Because I'm finding out that most of those people are really not accurate. They're, in fact, many of them are frauds.
Because if knowledge and wisdom does not benefit everyone else who receives it, it is not knowledge and wisdom.
That's true.
You know?
Right.
And so
it's like they say about a prophet in the Bible. A prophet in the Bible is a person who's 100% accurate 100% of the time. I mean, if they're not, they're not a prophet. I mean, if you cannot literally prophesy something from God that's accurate 100% of the time, then you're not getting that prophecy from God.
That's
because
true.
God is all omnipotent, all knowledge, and should be able to channel those prophecies correctly through the people down here that, that God uses. So, but you get a lot of people out there now that are professing to be prophets and channeling things from aliens and things like, it's just nonsense. They're making money on people who are very, very naive. But my caution is don't fall for that. And you might say the same thing about our books, but I would just say, well, we're not a cult, we're not selling seminars or anything. Just read the books, and if they don't resonate with you as accurate, and even from a physics standpoint, we're not talking about hocus-pocus New Age stuff, we're talking about a scientific physics basis. If they don't resonate on that, then throw them away.
Well, actually, you're not trying to convince anybody of anything, you're just sharing your experience.
Exactly
so,
right.
So there's a difference. You're not, by reading it, you're, it's not a question of, well, is he trying to convince somebody of this or somebody of that? That's not what's happening. It's more of a, you're just sharing.
Right. Exactly right.
And
the ones who awaken will awaken. And that's, we have no control over that. That's out of our control.
Dean, are you married?
Yes, I am.
You are. Okay. Now, how do you have children? I'm sorry if I'm asking things that are private.
Well, I have two poodles. Yeah, I don't really talk about anything private.
Okay.
Like
I was just wondering how your family, like, how this has changed. You know, here you are all these years, you know, one way and not awakened, and then you are. Maybe how it changed your viewpoint. Maybe this is too deep of a question, but like how it changed your viewpoint on your family that you have here versus your family, like your spirit family, so to speak.
Well, I will just say that there is no problem whatsoever.
Okay. But I mean, like, did it change the way you view your families, or did you combine them in your mind or in your being?
I tell you, that's almost impossible to explain.
Okay.
I'll just be honest with you. I'm not trying to hide anything. It's just impossible to explain that.
Okay.
It is so complex. I wish you could walk in my shoes for about 5 minutes, let alone a day, and you would understand that's a very complex thing you're asking there. And I think it's interesting that you asked that.
Okay.
But I would not know how to answer it.
Okay. Well, Elise, do you want to try to answer? Look at I'm like, well, I want to ask someone.
Yeah, I can
because I know
that.
You have, you know, your little girl who is singing on here with you. That's your earth child, and you say earth child, so I know that you must know spiritual children. So,
yes.
I mean, what's your take on that question?
Well, I have an earth family I was born to. I know very clearly who of them, and then I have some earth children born through my flesh. I know very clearly that my earth children happen to also be some my eternal children. I also have a few not in bodies. I have kin, earth kin, like I said, that are extended, just like we all do. I know my relation to them now, of course. I know where they really come from, and I know where some of them are going when they leave here. And I will also support what Dean said, is that all relationships down here are absolutely not the eternal ones. Some of them happen to be, but very few of them are. And it's important that we understand that all roles that we play within the loved ones' lives that we share are strictly for the purpose of having each being understand the eternal, you know, to whom you belong. So hopefully the earth kin relationships that we all have lead to that earthly experience. And I know I answered that roundabout.
I think it's a pretty good answer. I followed that, and I was also just curious too. Okay, so some of the relationships or maybe people that are in your life, if you were one of the people who have experienced a reincarnation, do you find that sometimes they're in your life more than once?
Yes, yes.
And maybe being different people in your life?
Indeed, but here's the crutch, is that mm-hmm. that person might not always remember and awaken to that. And that person whom you so deeply love in said particular lifetime might have some very intense struggles or a completely different contract with the one for which they are here to accomplish that they may or may not have clarity on in that lifetime. So if you, as whomever you are, as a being who is so dedicated to living by the heart and from the heart, have it within you, and it's yours to do, to help that other loved one in their journey of awakening, so be it. But that's mm-hmm. the thing. You can't ever open up a book for someone to show them the real mirror. It's got to be a radiation. It's you emanate just that unconditional love and just observe and see what happens.
Yeah.
For the other person.
So when you started to meet the other ladies that came forward in book two, now, where are they, if you don't mind me asking, in their progress with awakening to who they are or in who you know them to be?
They're pretty much all there.
Okay.
I mean, they understand where they come from. They have most of the details of that. They, of course, have their own particularities in this lifetime, which has determined the rate of awakening. But they're all really clear. And also, this is way important, that they're all very chosenly, willfully quiet. They have come. It took a lot for one of them, and I you can probably guess which one, to even speak, to express.
Mm-hmm.
And really, in book three, you're going to meet even one who is even more, oh, my God, no, you guys just got to do this on your own. But they're all there.
Okay.
They're all there. And express it in their own ways, of course.
So how many people did you have come forward so far that you're waiting
for? In book number two, we had the three.
Right.
And then in book number three, we have three more.
Oh, okay. So you are at 8.
We are at 9.
9? Okay.
Yes. There is still, at the end of writing book number one, there is still one out there.
Wow. That's
there is one strong witch, and there are several secondary witches that have not awakened yet. We know who they are,
mm-hmm.
but they're all over the world.
That's so incredible. What's the furthest one from you that's awakened?
Well, we have one in Romania. We have one in Scotland. But they're the ones, I can't tell you where the ones are that have not awakened yet, because I don't want to spoil their awakening. They have
right.
It's a very delicate process.
That's so interesting. So when they did, okay, so do they come over by you and move over by you, or what's happened?
Well, it's all explained in the book how they actually, some of them happen to be driving by or driving through. Hang on a second. I think Elise wants to say something about
okay.
this.
Well, you know, because we're all down here, communication is what it is. So we have definitely used computer technology, Facebook, email, believe it or not, to assist in this process of interconnection. And how crazy does that really sound when you consider what the supernatural gist of what we're talking about in scope. But it was very much of an organic and natural unfolding. And of course, Volume 2 reveals how some of them came to pass in the life here.
So do you find that you are both so much closer with these people because of being able to share this common wisdom or knowledge?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, again, a year or two ago, to have developed or have reconnected and rekindled a relationship with a few of them across the waters by way of Facebook, I mean, that's a little trippy.
Mm-hmm.
But then the wonderful, non-logical, non-rational things that unfold in communication can also be relayed to each other in that third dimensional technological way, like this happened to me. Oh, yep, mm-hmm, yep,
yeah.
I was there. And just supporting each other from afar. And you begin to realize that's the beauty. That's the one intrinsic beauty of 21st century technology, is you can, believe it or not, support by the heart someone from afar.
Yes.
And get to know them. Absolutely.
But I would like to interject, too, that the 20th century technology that is used on this world right now is nothing compared to what it should be at this time. This is extremely primitive. We think Facebook is something really wonderful. That's a little toy. It is nothing. We should not even be using computers now. There are other ways of doing things. And I also want to stress something else, because you mentioned, you said you feel closer to the strong witches, the wheat. And it's goes beyond just feeling close, because I want to say that everybody out there, you know, you're not from here. You are not from planet Earth. You are from somewhere else. You have descended from beings who were put here. And some of you have been, well, I'm not going to get into that. You'll get into that in book three. I almost gave something away there. But you're not from here. And the people that are the strong wheat, the secondary wheat, the support wheat that are out there by the hundreds, we have known them before. Many of you have known us before in other lives, in other places, not here on Earth. And that's something that is a very, very different concept that a lot of people are going to go, well, I don't know about that. You're talking about aliens and UFOs and things. And the answer to that would be no, we're not, because there are no such things as UFOs. That's going to curl a lot of hairs right there. That is not how people from other worlds get to this world. That is a very primitive concept, flying a metal machine using any type of energy thousands or millions of light years and expecting it to get here. That's ridiculous. There are other ways of doing that.
Well, and now we're getting into the subject where Chris is excited, because we're talking dimensional.
I can feel his excitement right
now. I know. He was practically, I could hardly ignore him.
His glass cage is sweating.
If you guys, I wish the camera faced that way, then you would see what I'm dealing with. I feel like turning it around.
I'm just trying, who said they're made of metal? You know? They could be made of, I don't know. We don't know what they're made of, right? That's why they're unidentified.
Well, yeah, exactly. But for you too, the interdimensional, like travel and everything like that. This is where we're getting to, and I have to say, when Dean when you started talking about how Facebook and everything else, it's not that advanced. I would say that it's actually in the way of everything that our bodies and our minds are actually capable of doing. We could probably communicate so much better if we didn't have this. And so it's not like, oh, that brought us closer. Actually, it's just a distraction from what we really are.
I think we communicated better before Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
We actually talked face to face.
It's just one more example of what the culture has done to destroy the human brain, the human
and
mind,
everything
human
that we
soul.
Are, you know, the essence right. of, you know, traveling and like you over there, Chris, always wanting to do the astral projection and everything.
I'm still trying.
You probably can just stop trying. You probably do it all the time. You just can't remember.
It's quite possible.
He does it every night when he goes to sleep.
Exactly. Where do you think you are in your dream?
I might remember an actual dream once a month if I'm lucky. So
that's because you're busy.
Yeah.
You're busy astral projecting.
It's the times you don't remember that you're having the time of your life.
But I'm trying to remember that part.
So, what's your take on all of that? Do you have either of you traveled interdimensionally or not?
The answer is yes. Both of us have.
Okay, so maybe you guys could give Chris a tip.
I'll give a tip to humanity right now.
Okay.
You're never, you know, the space shuttle. My father was one of the original designers of the original space shuttle program, and even when he was designing things for the space shuttle, he was thinking this is primitive, but he's right.
Just a metal spaceship.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. But if you think you're going to get from one star system to another star system in anybody's lifetime on this planet, you're wrong. You have to start thinking differently. And I know there have been a lot of books out there written about interdimensions and things like that, but there are ways of skipping dimensions. That's where you can go from one boundary to the next. And when you meet a boundary, you can interreact with that boundary and go directly to the next one. And you can do this in a heartbeat and go light years, thousands of light years, in a matter of a second. And people don't understand that. They can't see how that's even possible. But then they couldn't see how flying an airplane was possible, you know, 300 years ago.
Well, the best flight I ever took was actually in my dream when I was flying above the trees and everything else. And that wasn't in a plane or anything else, so the best flight was with that.
And I would say to you that you were having a memory of something you have actually done.
Yeah, it was very real. But I wanted to say that when we come back from our break, will it be our last segment, Chris? Where are we at with that?
Yeah. Well, we can throw another break in there, but we don't have to.
Yeah, let's not. Let's just have the break coming up, and then we'll just go into...
Take that all the way to the top?
Yeah, exactly. And when we come
back...
Sounds
good to me.
I would really love if you guys are both willing and able to share with me maybe the best or the most memorable or most, I don't know, the best experience you've had ever since you've been awakening. Like, what it is. Like, what's that moment where you just... You know, if you're able to put that to words, or maybe just an experience that you would really like to share with everybody that's just maybe a beautiful experience that you wouldn't have been able to have prior to this.
Okay.
So when we come back, we'll go to our break, but we're going to play another one of Elise's songs. So everybody stay tuned. We're going to have Dean and Elise back in just a few minutes, right?
Yep, this is Everlasting Cup.
Okay.
I'm free in his love, and I know our place in his body, and I am here to radiate what he would have all to see. When will you drink of the chalice of everlasting life, my child?
Lori and her guests are waiting to hear from you. Give them a call at 742-5555. Once again, that's 742-5555. Now back to the show that explores the outer limits of humanity. Here's Lori and the Dirt.
Jesus paid it all to him I owe. Sin had left gray crimson stain. He washed it white as snow. For nothing good have I, whereby thy grace to claim. I'll wash my garments white in the blood of Calvary's Lamb.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and that was Elise Brion, right? Did I get that correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, I was a little better with that one. And then Dean Parsons is with us, and we're coming up to the final segment. And that last song, that's when I picked Elise.
Yeah, okay.
I just want to say something. The one that you played before the break is kind of it has an interesting story behind it,
okay.
And that's probably what Elise would choose, I think, for being the most memorable part of this awakening.
Okay, well Chris, again, picked that.
Nailed it. Yeah.
Nailed it. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you want
to
tell us this?
Yeah, and I actually have two stories, but I want to share this one first because that song was written probably 2006 and in the Blue Ridge Mountains and as well as the Ozark Mountains. But when I was performing that before I met Dean on a street, in the town where I live, and it had a different name at that time, but this young man came up to me after the song was finished, and I had seen him from afar. He looked really kind of disheveled and really upset, but he came up to me and he said, "Lady, you don't know me, but I just want you to understand that that song convinced me not to go back to my apartment and blow my head off with a gun I just bought." And I nearly dropped my guitar, but I just looked at him, and my whole body just... It's pretty indescribable, but that was one experience, and that's one reason why I don't know that boy's name. You know, he had to be in his early 20s, and I just cherish that one especially because of that particular experience and what I realized can radiate through the power of voice and word and song.
Oh, I think that is so beautiful, and I'm so happy that happened and that he shared that with you so that you would know how meaningful what somebody does and the interactions between others, like, you can make or break somebody's day, life, their experience. You know, everybody is responsible for how we make others feel.
Yeah, indeed. But in the space of time since Dean and I have reconnected, I think the most profound and blastingly cool experience I've had is when, in the stillness of breath and quietude, and I give that to myself for hours a day. People call it meditation. To me, it's just stillness and quietude. But the spine is directly linked with all these things you were talking about, Chris, with astral projection, with all these clairs that we talk about in Volume 2 and Volume 1 as well. But the key towards all of these miraculous gifts is within the DNA and the spine and the breath. And so after years of just yogic stillness and craving and praying and wanting certain things so bad, there was a moment on a full moon on a spring evening when I literally felt and saw my body explode into the reality of what we are. And to describe it is basically just that, you know, I was within my breath and I sense, you know, it just starts up and down the spine, but then it just was a supernova blast of ecstasy where, you know, color and form and just total unity. And I found myself, when that kind of explosion cooled down a bit, I found myself on Hectares, and I saw things that it was just such a beloved homecoming. And I wanted to stay there forever, of course, never come back. But time-wise, it was probably less than 3 minutes in total, in that total experience. But when I came back, I was just filled with a humility and awe and wonder. And I never, ever, ever wanted to let that go. And I have willfully chosen to not, just to see with eyes that see people and life in that sort of lens and fashion.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Hey, you're welcome.
Do you want me to pipe in here?
Yes.
Well, a lot of my incredible, I have experiences every day A lot of the ones in book three are absolutely incredible as well. In fact, those are probably the best that no one's read about yet, because they're about miracles and healings that have happened and that are real. I mean, those are true stories in that book where people were healed and had miracles happen to them, and it's an incredible book. But I think the first thing that I ever had was when Mary took me from this world to another world 450 light years away in a heartbeat, literally, in a heartbeat. I was there. I was 1 minute here, the next split second, I was there, back on Hectaris, which we mention in book number one as the place of origin.
Right.
And that was when the first time that I really was able to touch Annie, my daughter, and see them together, and I could see the temple, I could see the incredible meadows up there. It's a huge, huge place. It makes Earth look kind of like a grain of sand.
Wow.
But that was an incredible experience. I wasn't there for very long, but it seemed like days. Mm-hmm. And since then, and Elisa's had experiences, and the Strong Wheat, who have come forward, have also had similar experiences now. So this is not something that's just wacko that one person is saying he's had. Many of these are documented, and it was. But I've had several experiences like that going back and forth now, and that's pretty exciting. And those are. And I want to just say everybody has the capability of doing that,
mm-hmm.
but you've got to get away from this. You know, most people are so worried about what the next movie star is having for lunch,
right.
that they don't have time to think about things like that.
And doesn't that seem so trivial? It's like, oh,
well, it's beneath trivial. It's beneath trivial.
Yeah.
It's way below that. And people don't seem to understand that. They're into their rock music and things like that, which is one of the things that's destroying the creation frequency, I might add, because it has a beat to it that is actually causing harm. And you'll read more about that in the next book. But there's just so many things that they need to learn on this world and change about themselves in order to save it. But as Mary wrote, it's up to them. You know, it's not God punishing anybody, and it's not God saying, okay, I'm going to step in and save the world. It's them having to say, okay, we're serious about this. We want to change things. We want to change our world. We want to develop. We want to go beyond what we are today. They're living like chimpanzees down here right now. I mean, it has not developed beyond practically their idea of the Stone Age, which did not exist as a lot of people profess that it did.
So if you, I don't know how many minutes we have left, Chris. How long do we have?
About 7 minutes.
7 minutes. Okay. During the 7 minutes, first of all, I'd really like you to share how the listeners out there and people who are viewing us can get a hold of your books, maybe some goals that you have now with the way things are in your lives. What are some of your goals and some of the things that you are looking forward to and you have planned now for your future?
Okay. Well, first of all, it's easy to get the books. They're published by All Things That Matter Press. You can go there, or just one click away, you can go to Amazon.com and just look up D.H. Parsons or Elise Brion, or look up the book titles. They're on there. The audio books are on there as well. You can go to the Bliss Parsons Institute. You can Google that. We have an institute that's becoming devoted to the work that we're doing. You will see a few products on there, but they're basically not related. They were already on there before I even wrote the books. And some of the ones that are coming out now are these really interesting little things, but they're very, very reasonable. It's not like we're making money on that either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Bliss Parsons Institute. We have four different Facebook pages, Dean Parsons, Elise R. Brion, the Bliss Parsons Institute, and the Strong Witch Society. They all have their own page. You can go on there and friend us. We'll friend you back. We don't turn anybody down. And those are the ways to get the book. Go ahead, Elise. She wants to say something.
We are very, very reachable, and we have encouraged and had interesting feedback and from messaging on Facebook. If you have a question, a comment, a heartfelt desire to reach us, we respond. We do.
In fact, we are so reachable. There are still some weed out there that need to be awakened, and they're going to have to contact us, and they'll probably do it by Facebook or something like that, because that's the way they have to do it. That's the only way they have to do it. So
that's
if
true.
You're out there in the listening audience, you could be one. I mean, the reason you're on here listening to this.
I just want to add that if you choose to use my name, that the R is important in the list of Elise R. Brion, because apparently there's quite a few Elise Brion out there.
There are. I've actually Googled that. So she's very correct in that.
And the album, and actually there's a second music album that's going to be available July 1st, but those are, the first one, Mother Made Manifest, is currently available on cdbaby.com, as well as the Bliss Parsons Institute.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing that. And so, listeners, if you haven't had a chance to write any of this down, you can always go to the Dirt page, and you can easily track down their books, them, and the rest of their Facebook pages, which I think I have to like a couple of them. I think I only have two of them liked. So I'm going to search them out. Yep, I'll search them out and post them on the Dirt for you guys. So as far as any goals or anything else you would like to share with the listeners, I mean, we only have a few more minutes, and I'd like just for you to say whatever it is that you would like to say to anybody.
Well, our main goal is exactly what Mary has set forth in book number one. We're trying to get people, number one, back to God, and number two, and not back to religion. Religions are not right. It's God that's right. We want to get people back to God. And we want to get people to change their ways. Those are the two things that have to happen on this world in order to save the world. There are 22 years left, and a lot of people are thinking this is one of those doomsday Armageddon things. Well, it sort of is, but it's not. We're not like some wacko guy out and, you know, saying the Lord's coming back and all. That's not what's happening. 22 years has to do with the fact that people are destroying this world, and they have a very short period of time to change that and get back to the truth. So my goal, Elise's goal, all of the Wheat's goal, is to get people back to that. It has nothing to do with pushing books or anything like that. It's simply waking people up so that they understand time is short, and if they don't believe that, all they've got to do is look at the political situation of this world today. And everything that's happening in the world physically and politically was predicted in those first two books. And it's coming through exactly the way it was predicted. And it's going to get worse, folks, before it gets better, unless people begin to get back to God, get their lives right, and quit worrying about what the Kardashians are doing and what they're having for lunch and things like that, and start thinking about how to change this world for a better place.
I agree with you 100% with that. Chris has something to say here.
I mean, I was just wondering if anyone's actually ever met anybody who does really care about the Kardashians.
I haven't.
I haven't. Why are they on TV all the time?
That's a good question.
It is a good question. I don't know.
You wonder why they were even born, to be honest. But,
well,
but there's a reason for everything.
It's a distraction.
A distraction, right.
Yeah, there's a lot
Actually, we tell you why they were born in book two.
I read book two. How come I don't know the answer?
Well, we don't mention the names of people.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a second. I would have noticed that.
We mentioned the darker forces and the darker entities who poisoned the DNA of humanity many years ago, and we're reaping the benefit of that right now in Max.
The word of Christ is the living body of unconditional love and truth, and it is every single person's birthright on this planet to reconnect, rejuvenate, and rejoice within this reality.
I am really happy that I've had the chance to have you both on the show. And please extend my hellos to the ladies that were introduced to us in the second book. Thank you very much. We're actually out of time, but I want to thank both Dean Parsons and Elise Brion for being here tonight, and God bless you both so much and everything that you're doing, and thank you for a beautiful message.
You are a wonderful, wonderful host, one of the best we've ever had.
Amen.
Thank you very much for that, and both of you, bless you both, and please have a great weekend, and everybody, please check out my page and check out their books. And again, everybody, stay tuned for The Dirt next week.